Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Here we are in the holiday season. Going to be over here in about a week and a half. Christmas is obviously a week away. I'm just telling it for you, Irish Tony, because I'm not sure if people who live in the UK celebrate Christmas. Do you? Send me a comment on that one, bud. Having said that, I got Rob Shiras with me. Rob has been on the show before. Rob just got back from a river cruise in Europe, and we're going to talk a little bit about how the European countries handle the COVID situation right now. Robbie, you got over there. Where did you actually debark?
We were required to have a COVID vaccination card and proof of negative COVID test, the PCR test, before being allowed to even travel over there and get on board. That was required for every port of call that we came to. And just about every shop that we went to in Europe, from Budapest all the way to Amsterdam, required the COVID card and the passport so they could make sure it was your card. And I found it refreshing.
Why is that? Myself and most of the listeners really wonder. You're actually not that much younger than I am, so you would, having said that, you would be in a pretty, I would have to say, dangerous category, if I'm not mistaken, Robbie.
That's right. I'm more at risk. So I don't mind having to be vaccinated, and I don't mind showing proof of vaccination. And as a matter of fact, on board the boat, every morning they took a saliva sample and did a PCR test on it for every passenger and every crew member. So that satisfied the most stringent requirements of any of the countries that we passed through along the way down.
How many turistas on the boat, Robbie?
A couple of hundred. The boat was only about half full.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you left the boat and you went on excursions on shore, what was the situation there in terms of COVID regulations?
Well, you were required to wear a mask everywhere you went, unless you were eating or drinking. So the people were really happy to do it. And when it became time for them to be required to be vaccinated, they were in line. They were in line for it.
And they knew, but they knew going into this thing what they were in for. Let me ask you this, Robbie. In terms of social events on the boat, let's talk about how that was handled from a COVID situation.
Well, you were required to wear a mask everywhere on the boat unless you were eating or drinking, period. So social events were, they were great. You know, we danced, we ate, we drank. It was great. Had a great time.
So the COVID-19 really didn't affect the trip really whatsoever, if I'm not mistaken. What about some of the tourist hotspots on shore? How did they handle the tourists?
There was social distancing in every venue that we went to, indoors or outdoors.
You know, it's funny, Robbie, but we complain here in the United States about the fact that we understand that perhaps masks aren't all that effective. There is one particular model of a mask that is very effective. It's very high up the ladder, but it's not what people typically wear. We complain here about having to wear masks almost every place, and at least as of this recording, Biden hasn't won out. He hasn't been able to say that, well, you got to have a mask every place outdoors, with the exception, I know, in New York. They're not talking about masks also even indoors in the home. From what I know about COVID, from what I've learned about COVID through a fair amount of research that I've done, boy, I'm sounding like I really, really done a lot in my life, but not much in the way of education. Anyway, having said that, Robbie, it strikes me that the regulations in Europe really aren't that much different than they are over here. Yet, the number of cases of COVID-19 in Europe are significantly higher, and the death rates are significantly higher in America than they are in the European countries. Comments?
Their vaccination rate was much lower than ours, And now they have required vaccinations if you want to go into a public establishment. So that is now something that they're on board with. The masks that they're being required to wear are a different kind. They're still a medical grade mask. In Europe, they just have a different designation on them. They're a lot like the KN95 masks that we wear here in the U.S., about the same specifications.
I don't believe that the average run-of-the-mill masks that the merchants are giving out here in America are really adequate to keep out virtually any kind of germs. They're not the KN98s that you're talking about. I think they're basically, truly, as we would say in the sporting industry, if you're buying sporting equipment, they're really made for novices, not necessarily for anything sophisticated, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, they're maybe used for nursing. I just don't understand why they use them. They're basically a token mask. They don't really do anything. It's like a prophylactic with a hole in the end.
Not much use, particularly if you're in high school and you don't want to get in trouble. But anyway, having said all of that, in terms of the prophylactic medicines out there, I have been taking vitamin D, I've been taking zinc, I've been taking all the B vitamins, I've been taking the C vitamins, and I'm doing that basically because one of our naturalists, for lack of better terms, in the audience, Larry, has convinced me that the prophylactic measures really do work equally as well as masking up and the rest of it. You have any comments on that, Rob?
I'm all for any kind of protection that people can get, and I think people need to really just get used to using what's going to work and quit complaining about it.
Why do you say quit complaining? It's been proven pretty effectively that if you're certainly under the age of 20 and perhaps even under the age of 45, it's a disease that you really don't have to worry about. I know that the mortality rate for people in that particular category is less than 1%. Interestingly enough, even for old folks like myself at the age of 78, if I get COVID, my chances of mortality are also less than 1%. So you have to wonder sometimes if we aren't perhaps looking at this kick in the can, as they say, down the road in the wrong direction. Any comments?
Well, there are groups of us that are at higher risk.
Yeah.
And the ones that feel that it's okay for them because they're not going to die if they get COVID doesn't mean that they're not going to give it to somebody who is at higher risk. For instance, their own parents.
Well, now that's a very good point. That's something that my wife and I used to talk about. She would say, when I would complain about the lockdowns, when I would complain about the masks, etc., she said, well, don't you care about infecting other people? Actually, I cared very much about affecting her because she was very high risk. And consequently, I've had all of the vaccination shots and I've had all of the boosters. Having said that, Robbie, in terms of Europe and the river cruise, we're down to about a minute here. Give us kind of a brief summary in the next minute as to how you enjoyed the cruise and what you did.
We had an absolute blast, and being required to take precautions didn't put a damper on the trip at all. We were all in the same boat, so to speak, and we enjoyed every minute of it. We shared a lot of experiences with each other, and it was absolutely a blast. I highly recommend it. We did just skate through Austria before it went into lockdown, and we skated through Germany before they closed the Christmas markets. So we were lucky. The boat behind us wasn't as fortunate.
Mr. Lucky, I'm going to be right back with Rob Shire. Stick around. I'm going to talk about computers.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Talking with Rob Shivers again. Not going to be talking about COVID in Europe this time. The war we're going to be talking about this time is the evolution of the computer. You know, interesting story, and I think about this almost weekly, and that is when I got one of my degrees out of the University of Washington, I got a job selling calculators, and I remember I was entirely, if I learned how to talk, I'd be dangerous. I was entirely chagrined and amazed at how cheap you could buy computers for. They're so cheap, you know, my employer almost couldn't pay me a commission. Calculators were available back in those days, and that was like 1962, 1963. You could buy a calculator, a total full function, logarithmic, etc. calculator back in those days for, I don't know what, $20, $5, $10, whatever. Well, the same thing is happening with computers right now. Computers, basically, you can go into your average Kroger store and buy a very, very simple laptop that will certainly allow me to do everything that I want to do, although only not as efficiently for, what, $100. Where do you see computers going, Robbie, in the future?
Well, the availability certainly is out there, Al. You can get just about any functionality you want in a little inexpensive device, handheld, whether it's a tablet or a phone or something in between, and stream the media that you're looking for. And it's tremendous power right in the palm of your hand.
Robbie, let's talk a little bit about marrying a computer to a television set. You know, I think the movie house would be a terrible industry today to invest in. Not movies in general, but the physical movie theaters, because you can just as easily sit home, not pay $3, $4, $5 for some popcorn, $3, $4, $5 for a Coke, what have you. Now you can utilize virtually computers in an amazing way. Why don't you explain what you and I did when we watched The Wrecking Crew the other night?
Well, you obviously have been sitting home quite a while, Al, because $3, $4, $5 doesn't get you much these days. But I think that the movie industry is not going to die anytime soon. I think that they are getting more popular than ever in spite of the fact that you can stream things on a tablet. People like to go to the movies, and I don't see them failing anytime soon. But on the other hand, I believe that the cable networks, the providers of television out there, are shaking in their boots because people can pretty much watch whatever they want to for free or for a very low price on their handheld devices without having to get some kind of a package deal.
Package deal. You and I watched a program the other night, and you talk about phenomenal sound, you talk about phenomenal video, etc., etc. We watched a movie entitled The Wrecking Crew. The Wrecking Crew, we're not talking about the Dean Martin movie. There was a movie that he put out when he played some Matt Helm or whatever the guy's name was, but The Wrecking Crew was the name given to the top absolute epitome of the studio musicians in Hollywood for a number of years, Hollywood and New York, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, the audio was so incredible on that because we streamed it, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not even sure how to explain this, so I'm going to ask you to explain it to the listeners. What does it mean when I say we streamed it through my TV using my laptop and then my TV? Why did we have to do that?
Streaming basically means you're just watching it as it's being pulled down from the internet. And so this Wrecking Crew that we watched was a streamed broadcast, and it was a lot of fun to watch. And it's amazing how much content is out there for little or no money. And when, you know, you get a package deal through your cable or TV provider, and there's 200 channels and there's still nothing on.
Maybe there's nothing on because nobody wants to go to the go to the effort of looking at 200 channels. But when you can get whatever you want, if you know how to get it, and I don't know how to get it personally, but I'd like you to explain that to our listeners. Let's assume that somebody wanted to watch The Wrecking Crew. We've got some real rock and roll fans out there, and The Wrecking Crew was the epitome of the rock and roll backup bands. Calling them backup bands is totally the wrong way to put it. It's almost an insult. They were the top quality rock and roll musicians in either Hollywood or New York City, and they basically augmented the musicians who were on records eventually. How did you get that to go to the TV, Robin? Where was your source?
Well, basically, you just search for it, and the way I found it was to just search for it on a popular search engine and go to the site where it was streaming and watch it. And sometimes you have to watch separate segments, and sometimes they have the entirety. And you know, one of the more popular providers of streaming, of course, is YouTube today, and they're a good place to watch just about any kind of music or video that you'd like to see.
Yeah, we had a ball watching this thing. It was really, really great. By the way, I wanted to make an announcement to the folks who listen to our podcasts and who are very, very active, and I thank you very much for doing that on our blog. Big Al's going to take a bit of a break. We're going to continue doing the radio shows, but in terms of the dailies, we're going to stop doing dailies from now until the end of the year. With everything that's happened in my life, and all of you guys are close enough friends that you know what that is, I really need just a couple of weeks to kick back and not have to worry about it. Going to have a great show this weekend, though. There's no question about that. As you can see, we are spreading out a little bit in the sense that we're talking about computers right now and the entertainment value that personal laptops have right now. Rob, we got 1 minute left exactly, actually a minute and 10 seconds. Wrap it up for us, if you would, by talking about the entertainment value of laptops.
Laptops provide you with pretty much anything that you want to source from anywhere, and it's just a tremendous way to connect yourself with streaming media online and anything that you want to watch.
Well, it's really been fun getting to know Rob Shires, because he is one of the best in the business at doing this, and we have seen some absolutely phenomenal resources, research, primarily in the music category this time. But, you know, I remember when I was a kid, my parents went out and spent $3,000 on an Encyclopedia Britannica. All you have to do today to find out anything about virtually anything you can think of is get a basic laptop, Google what you're looking for information for, and you can get all of the information in the world about that particular subject. Stick around. Big Al's going to be right back with Jimmy and also with Danny Pacini. Stick around.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in to our the second hour, very exciting second hour of KER Politics. I'm going to talk about one subject right now, and that is the direction our country is headed. I think most of you would agree with me. I've got Jim McKinney on the line with me. Jimmy, I'd like you to give me your opinion on this, but a fellow who happens to be part of the Kennedy family said that in 2020, that was the year that liberal democracy effectively collapsed worldwide. It certainly collapsed in the United States. Democrats really aren't Democrats anymore. There's no question about that. Democrats are now simply progressives. That is a very, very telling comment about American society, and it really is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. The author of a book that I'm reading called The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, etc., said the very governmental health regulations, social media eminences, and media companies that idealistic population rely upon as champions of freedom, health, democracy, civil rights, and evidence-based public policy seem to collectively pivot in lockstep an assault against free speech and personal freedom. Jimmy, why don't you start out giving an opinion on that, what I just read?
So I listened to Robert Kennedy Jr., the person that wrote the book, mm-hmm. Bobby Kennedy's son.
Yep.
And I listened to him in a discussion with Tucker Carlson on Tucker Carlson's his show, not the evening show, but Tucker Carlson Today. It's a pay-for-effort with Fox, I believe. So in that discussion, first of all, for people that want to look it up and listen to it, I think it's very valuable. It's about a 40-minute conversation. And he explains and talks about all the facts behind the information he provides and basically talks about Anthony Fauci, talks about what had happened with not only COVID, but other issues over time with the pharmaceutical companies and Anthony Fauci and a number of other people that have taken away basic rights and fundamental principles of our Constitution and people. And I think it's an incredibly powerful discussion and conversation. And he claims that he has all the documentation and has, literally hundreds of footnotes and annotations to prove all the statements and accusations he makes in that. I think it's an important thing for everyone to understand what's happening right now in global corporate domination.
Yep.
Of basically our democracy.
Well, what's happening in our democracy right now is, to quote the author, he is saying, these trusted institutions seem to be acting in concert to generate fear, promote obedience. Sound familiar, Jimmy? Discourage critical thinking and herd 7 billion people to march to a single tune, culminating in mass public health experiments with a novel, shoddily tested and improperly licensed technology. So a technology that is so risky, the manufacturers have refused to produce it unless every government on earth shielded them from liability. Jimmy, it's what you have led. You have led the direction of this show into exactly what this author is saying, and he is very, very succinct when he says, I can prove every comment that I've ever made. I think we're onto something, Jim. Let me tell you what he says about the medical community. In the introduction, he says, quote, the first step is to give up the illusion that the primary purpose of modern medical research is to improve Americans' health most effectively and efficiently. In our opinion, the primary purpose of commercially funded clinical research is to maximize the financial freedom on investment, not health. This is not something the author said. This is a direct quote from Dr. John Abramson, MD of the Harvard Medical School. Jimmy, give us some opinions on this, would you? We're down. We just to give you an idea, I know you've got a clock, but we're down to about 9 minutes.
Yeah, I think so. My view is that the ultimate goal here is twofold. One is control.
Yep.
And control means intimidating people, putting them into fear. And the reason why they're pushing control, these corporate entities that have actually partnered very closely with the government infrastructure of the FDA and the CDC and, of course, the National Institute of Health,
right,
and NIAID with Fauci. I think the second part of that is financial incentive. It's about money. So it's power and control. And with the agreements that were made, and this is the unfortunate actions of the Trump administration, they were actually under the fear and were intimidated through a very effective propaganda campaign that started with the CCP, with the Chinese Communist Party, to bring intense fear over this potential virus that could have been, apparently initially looked incredibly devastating. I think the pharmaceuticals and I think Anthony Fauci probably understood that it wasn't as fearful, but then they saw an opportunity. When they saw an opportunity, they perpetuated that fear. And now the institution has manipulated the entire, taken away these our choices in our government, our elected officials are not making decisions because health directors are doing it under the influence. And that's where the Trump administration made a mistake. They trusted Anthony Fauci and these doctors and these people to be doing the right thing. But the problem is they don't respond to voters. They respond to whoever, whatever information or influences they have. And who has the power and the influence and the research? The big pharmaceuticals. They partner with them. So they've been manipulated. They were manipulated. They made bad decisions based on information that they got from bad people that had different interests. And that's what we're facing, a tremendous act to control and to make money. And it's actually quite frightening right now. This is a dystopian nightmare that most people would have never, ever imagined 2 years ago.
You know, it's funny, Jimmy, but I was going to take a break from now until the end of the year from doing the daily podcast that we do. And I was using as an excuse the fact that I was really having some trouble right now emotionally, and I really am. But the fact of the matter is, we're going to go right back and start doing the podcast on a daily basis. Hopefully, you're going to be there with me. We're going to go through this particular book written by one of the Kennedy family's more prominent members. And we're going to talk about how this book relates to exactly every single thing that we have been talking about in the for the last 2 years on this particular show. Larry actually has talked me into doing this. We're going to go through the book because that book really was taken, in my opinion, to a large extent. No disrespect to the author, but that book basically is a synopsis of everything that we have been talking about along with our bloggers on this site. Now, to make my time worthwhile, I'm going to ask you guys, and Jimmy's time worthwhile, I'm going to ask you guys to please, please comment as much as you can on the blog. We want our website to be able to be used for an informational source. I'm going to reach out to other people who have blogs and see if they aren't willing to work with us on this one. Larry claims that we have a diamond in the rough. Now, let me say one thing. Neither Jimmy nor some of the other folks you're going to hear on the show have anything to gain from this financially. It's totally passion. We know we can make a difference.
So I agree that we're doing this for the benefit of people to share information, to share knowledge, and it's not about the money. In fact, that's something that we have to really change with so many people's interest in mass media to make a buck off TikTok or off, you know, their little social media, you know, videos. That's what's driving people to stupidity. I mean, the fact is we just need more solid and quality information out there, and we need people that are willing to do it, not just for money, but there's nothing wrong with that, but at the same time, when it's manipulating people's information in order to maximize their profits and it's lying to them, that has to stop.
Hey, welcome in here to wrap up KEF Politics. Got Dan Pisani on the line, and we're going to talk about something that I think is incredibly important. I think it's important because I think this is where Americans are getting screwed. Article in Imprimis magazine was written by John Lott, by the way. Got to give full credit where credit is deserved. Is ensuring election integrity anti-democratic? I thought it was a very interesting article in the sense that the election rules that were put into place back in the 70s, etc., by Jimmy Carter and Jim Baker, basically were a far cry from what they are today. Voter identification was very definitely required, as it is in the majority, far and away the majority, when the majority, like, edit that out, far away the majority, like 47 of the European countries, requires some very stringent identification if a person wants to vote. In the United States, you don't even have to speak English to vote, and you don't even have to know anything about politics. Danny, what's your opinion on this?
Well, I thought it was interesting the commission that Carter and Baker were the head of, and there were a number of people, Tom Daschle and other people involved in it, that they've essentially, many of them have gone back on it. Carter just about his own findings, which just tells you how much politics has become a part of this whole thing. It's just too bad. Election integrity is critical. There's rampant fraud in our elections. It's not just the fraud that Trump was alleging. We don't know who's voting these ballots. That's the bottom line. It's not that they're not counting it correctly. There could be something going on in there. The Russians famously said that, you know, it's who counts the votes that matters. But who's submitting these ballots? You have pressure on people. I thought in Primus, again, you got to love Hillsdale College. They really come through in discussing these matters. But prior to any of this election integrity, before we had a secret ballot, people would sell their vote. You'd use a different colored ballot or whatever ticket you put in for the voting system, and you would sell your vote. And some people were voting other people's vote, voting dead people's ballots. And that's what we have now. We don't know who's voting these ballots, and that's why you need to have some kind of ID system. Either show up at the polls and demonstrate who you are or submit an ID. At least with the absentee system, which is different from the mail-in ballot system, the absentee system, you know, you at least have to ask for a ballot. You yourself have to ask for a ballot and show ID. With the mail-in, they're just sending them all over. I call it confetti ballots because they're just kind of throw them all over the place. And we don't know who's putting pressure on who within a family is doing it, who at an old folks home is pressuring people or grabbing ballots at an apartment building where they're all in kind of a public mail area. You just don't know who's voting these ballots. So somehow, some way, we've got to get back to a system that makes some sense. And it was interesting how Primus talked about how this is true in most of Europe, which we keep trying to compare ourselves to. I don't know why, but most of Europe practices this common sense view.
47 countries, Danny.
Yes.
Rather amazing.
It is amazing, and it's unfortunate that we don't feel this way, but I hate to keep blaming the left, but they clearly are looking for a result, and they don't care about the morality of how they do it. They know that there's rampant fraud in these systems, and yet they are willing to look the other way to get the result that they want. And somehow, some way, we have got to inform people that you just can't have a system like this where you don't have a secret ballot and you don't have controls over those ballots.
Got another thing I want to get your opinion on, Danny, and that is I'm reading a book about Fauci, and in that particular book, I'm not going to necessarily read the parts that I want your opinions on because I've already done that earlier in the show, but the author who, as you just alluded to, it was a very important person, part of the author of the book, part of the in crowd, so to speak, with the Kennedy family, and he said that in the year 2000, the Democratic Party, as it existed in the relatively near past, ceased to exist, and that the Democratic Party today is nothing more than the Progressive Party, who are nothing more. He doesn't say this, but it's what I say. They're nothing more but socialists, man.
Well, I got to tell you, Mr. Kennedy and I would probably not agree on virtually every subject. And it's interesting you see how this subject of vaccine and vaccine mandates, how people break down. It doesn't necessarily follow the party lines. There's no question that a lot of woke progressive types, they're into the whole mandate, government authority, all that stuff, and they're too smart for all of us, and they know better than us. But there are a lot of people who typically come down on the other side of the fence, who are on the left side, who don't like being told what to do. And that kind of used to be the way the left was. The left they felt very strongly about civil rights. And they felt that we have certain protections in our Constitution and that those shouldn't be violated. But they've kind of looked the other way. They've chosen this side. It's almost a religion with them. We've talked about this before. But he makes some very critical points that this is another incremental step where the government is taking away your own personal authority, and we better watch it. I think he's absolutely right. The federal government for sure has no authority in this matter whatsoever. The states, they have they do under the Constitution have a lot of authority still in the area of health. But the federal government has no place in it whatsoever, and you can see that Biden keeps losing in court. But I think his book is right on. I totally agree with him, even though I wouldn't agree with him on virtually every other subject.
Well, I think it's interesting because everything that you just said, I think, is rather amazing. And I think it really shows that the Democrats are doing a great job of shooting themselves in the foot. Interestingly enough, we had a very hotly contested recall election in Seattle just this past week. One of the Seattle City Council members who inappropriately used funds, as I understand it, and who is an avowed socialist, savant, is her name. She was married to a Microsoft executive, if I'm not mistaken. They got divorced. She is now a card-carrying socialist, and she's proud to admit it. They tried to recall her in Seattle, and up until yesterday, she was way, way behind in that particular election. And yesterday, an hour after the results came in, I got them from a friend, and it turned out her recall had failed. I would like to know how she managed to get enough votes, because on Wednesday it was mathematically impossible for her to miss the recall, but she did it somehow. Any comments on that?
Well, I feel for people in Seattle, I still think the best advertisement for conservative management is lefty management. You get to see it in action. Conservatives aren't typically not very good at being persuasive, but when you see the alternative, you realize, okay, well, this is where I need to go. But, you know, again, it could be a couple of things. Again, it's who counts the votes, for one, and who's voting these votes. We have no idea. You just don't know. They're not transparent systems. So I couldn't even begin to comment on what actually happened there. I'm amazed that some of these people are in office. Can anyone explain Ilhan Omar in Minneapolis? I mean, I don't know. How do these people get into office? But gradually, as people see them, or any of the DAs across the country, Chesa Boudin and all these people, and the guy in L.A., how do they get to office? But then you have to live under them, and then people start to change their mind. You start to see in Seattle that things are changing there. They've had enough of it, and we're going to get to that point where people have had enough.
Well, I think that people who I talked to in Seattle when I was down there on Halloween taking the grandkids trick-or-treating, I spoke with a lot of people in a fairly liberal neighborhood, I have to say, very nice neighborhood, but really fairly liberal, I would have to say. And every one of those people, instead of getting offended by my questions, said exactly the same thing. The city government has to go. I have innumerable friends who want to leave Seattle. They can't do it because economically it's impossible for them because of their jobs. But Seattle, unfortunately, is turning into a major, major cesspool, almost as bad as San Francisco, which is pretty bad. There are parts of Seattle you definitely are advised to not go into after dark by yourself, assuming you're not a retired Green Beret or what have you. And I left Seattle during Halloween fairly optimistic because I knew we had an election coming up. I thought we'd see more conservatives in office, and in fact we did. But in the case of Sawant, no, she was not recalled, and that's a shame, in my opinion. Danny, thank you so much, man.
Good to be with you.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.